Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.
Okay. We good now. I think we good now.
Yum.
Does my all sound right. Sound okay?
Yeah, you sound beautiful.
Yeah, you sound great.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right. Gang. Let's get into this.
Gang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 5 of Survivor Island of the Idols. My name is Mike Bloom. Here to talk about swaps, switches, and everything in between as the season keeps on chugging along. Of course, I am not alone. I am joined by, first, a familiar face, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Is that a face that is on your socks, Mike? Because
oh, no.
I know I have socks with my cat's faces on them in preparation for this podcast. So I came prepared.
I mean, what people might not know is that I obviously, you know, have the benefit of being able to podcast with a lot of people, and sometimes the names get jumbled in my mind, so I usually wear a piece of clothing that has their face on it when I'm recording with them so that I remember, okay, it's Liana today. I look down on my shoes, and it has Liana printed across the sole of it.
Yeah, okay, that's smart. That's how you keep everything in check. I got it.
And much like the members of Vokai and Lyro met some new faces this week, we are bringing a new face to the B&B, though, of course, she is not unfamiliar to those of you that have checked out the Big Brother live feed recaps or even have listened to the Wand Off. She is one half of the inimitable duo, Jenny and Colin. Jenny Autumn, welcome to the B&B. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. I feel like some sort of like lowly vagrant that's just been like kind of loitering around like outside of the B&B for a while, you know, peering in the windows when no one was looking. And I feel like, you know, you guys kind of just got sick of me like wandering around and you're like, do you need to use the phone or something? And you've invited me in and now I'm just never going to leave. So good job.
Welcome in. You can use our phone if needed. Very happy to have the vagrant that's loitering outside.
Yeah, I will warn you, the phone doesn't work. It's not connected to anything because it's 2019. We all use cell phones, but go ahead and use it if you want to keep up that illusion.
Perfect. I'm not calling anyone anyway. It was just an excuse to get inside. I'm here now.
Well, so Jenny, let's get on the line about your Survivor experience. As a new member of the B&B, it's customary for us to get the resumes of all the vagrants we have shamble in through these beloved doorways. When did you start watching Survivor and what has kept you watching up through season 39?
I am a day one. I am a day one Survivor and Big Brother person. To this day, they are the only two shows that I actually watch. So I started watching, you know, I think it was like early high school was when those shows started. And I watched them through my 4 years of high school. And then I kind of fell off with Survivor for a few years while I was in university, just because I often didn't have a TV and, you know, I didn't really have any friends that watched it. So it wasn't really a priority for other people to be watching it. I like, you know, I ended up watching things like The OC and like Laguna Beach. I'm really dating myself with this. I kept up with Big Brother because Big Brother was on in the summer when I would like go home to my parents that had a TV. But I did really fall off for a few years with Survivor. And it wasn't until I believe like 2011 when I, you know, met and became friends with the aforementioned Colin, who's now one of my best friends. And we ended up connecting over Survivor that we used to watch it and loved it. And he had kept up with it. And he was like, oh, my God, I'm going to give you a list of seasons that you need to get caught up on. And so I binged like a few seasons And I found like a YouTube link with Spanish subtitles. So it was really fun. So like I learned some Spanish from Survivor.
Wow. Rosetta Survivor Stone. That's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, Adelante Chicos is come on in, guys.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I forget some of the terms, but I mean, I was basically fluent in Spanish in terms of, you know, your everyday Survivor sayings. And so then I kind of started watching regularly from there. Colin and I would get together and eat like a bunch of food and watch the episodes together. And I've stayed steady since then.
That's amazing. That's actually that just reminds me of I think it was on Renap this week talking about learning English from friends.
Yeah.
This is like you learning Spanish from watching Survivor. That's a really cool story.
And Spanish is like not like as Haley mentioned, our national languages are English and French. Like Spanish is not very common here. So, you know, I had some pretty legit like language that I was able to throw around in conversation because I'm always telling people to come on in, guys. So,
yeah, that's it. You start every conversation with a Spanish speaker with, oh, adelante, chicos.
Yes.
I think that I also can imagine watching it with Spanish subtitles. I wonder how the names translate over, especially those like Coach, for example. You know, does he just go by Coach in the subtitles, or do they actually literally translate the word for coach into Spanish and call him that?
I want to say probably, I can't remember, but I want to say probably just like his name, but it's hard to say. As we know, like sometimes the closed captioning is not always on point. So,
oh my gosh. Now I want to go back and check that to see. And especially I want to know what all the nicknames are that Coach would give everybody, you know, or like Philip Shepherd, for example, all of the nicknames that he was giving out, you know, like that would be a really good way to learn vocabulary.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can find the seasons that had the Spanish subtitles. It made for, you know, a really interesting viewing experience.
Do you think that should be the next lesson Robin Sandra teach is Spanish?
Sure, why not? I mean, we haven't seen the other lessons really utilized. So, why not? Learn some Spanish.
Like incorporate some Spanish words into the next tribal council every time Jeff asks you a question and you get an idol if you do that.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, come on, that's like pretty much on par with some of the other ones, right? I think that totally fits.
Name Sandra's dogs in Spanish.
Right. Yeah, that's it's just like the escalation of everything. Okay, so sneak around the other tribe's camp in Spanish.
In Spanish.
Take this quiz in Spanish.
Here's the map, but it's in Spanish.
Well, speaking of Ram and Sandra, Jenny, I'd love to get your thoughts. This is the first time we're having you on, period. Let alone in this season. We're now through 5 episodes, a little more than a third of the way through. What have your thoughts been on Survivor 39 thus far?
I mean, I'm with, you know, the majority of people that when they heard about this season was like, what? Why? This is so stupid, but I'm here for it. I've enjoyed it. I'm much like Rob in that I don't care for the reward challenges. I'm one of those people that tends to just tune out during the challenges in general. So,
Karishma's very grateful about that.
Yeah. you know, replacing a reward challenge where, you know, I don't, obviously we got it this episode, but, seeing something that is just a little bit more entertaining. Like, I think one challenge per episode is good. I'm not watching the show for the challenges. So if you're going to, you know, give us something where we get some character piece on a certain castaway, and also we get to see Boston Rob and Sandra be them, you know, I don't love that it takes away a little bit of time from the story about what's going on at the separate camps, but we do end up getting these, like I said, these character pieces on the people that are going to the Island of the Idols. And Boston Rob and Sandra are just such excellent people to play off of. So I'm honestly liking it a lot more than I thought I was going to. It, you know, there's definitely been some points where I'm like, this is so unnecessary. It's entertaining. I really like the cast, and I love the like stupid commentary of Rob and Sandra at Tribal Council. Like, like in this past episode when Sandra's just like, oh, those three have been to a lot of tribal councils. Like, it's just like the meetings of like Captain Obvious and like Captain More Obvious. So, you know, it's not so integral to the game itself, but I'm enjoying it.
Do you? Okay. The real question on everyone's lips, how scripted are Rob and Sandra?
Shouldn't we ask Coach that?
I was saying, Jenny, I'll cede like the next 15 minutes to you if you want to go on a dialogue or a question about.
Yeah. Would you like to marinate on the dialogue?
How much kombucha have you had before coming on here is the big question.
Zero. I've actually never had any kombucha.
I tried it once. I did not care for it.
I feel like I wouldn't like it. I am enjoying a Saturday morning mimosa. It's the weekend, guys, okay?
Oh, ooh, that's amazing.
Yeah, just mix them together and you get the best of both worlds. I will fully admit, I am having so much fun with this season. Maybe it's just because, I don't know, maybe I have like a weirdly personal connection to the cast. Maybe it's just because there is so much messiness going on our screen every week, and I absolutely love it. Maybe it's just all these goofy things that are going on, several of which we'll talk about this episode, but I would say that, you know, it's not like the most big bombastic season out there, but there's just so much fun stuff going on each and every week that I'm so fortunate to get to talk about. The weird thing about this episode too is because we didn't get any Island of the Idols, technically speaking, this is the most quote unquote normal episode of Survivor we've had in 2019 so far, American wise. There's no Edge of Extinction. There's no Island of the Idols, no fire making, etc. This is the most normal Survivor has been. And that being said, I thought it was still a pretty interesting episode with given all the different dynamics and the way new characters were interacting with each other.
I feel like I saw a lot of people complaining on Twitter about it being boring. And it's just like people are complaining about like all of the gimmicks and stuff like that. And then it's like we got an actual normal episode, as you said, Mike. And then like people are still not happy. So I honestly just feel like people are going to complain no matter what. I thought it was a really fun episode. I mean, obviously not like the most dramatic boot, but like we're still in the pre-merge and it's a post-swap, like down in the numbers. Of course, there's going to be some episodes where you know, the boot makes sense. I don't think that means it's a boring episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny to think like, oh, if you just tuned into this episode, it would be, like you said, Mike, a sort of quote unquote, like normal episode. And then all of a sudden you have Boston, Rob and Sandra in like a tiny shack making comments about tribal council. That makes absolutely no sense out of context. I don't think it makes sense in context either, but like I can imagine tuning in and being like, what is going on right now? Like, when did they add the peanut gallery to Survivor?
Yeah, like if you woke up a coma patient and you're like, great, let's sit down, watch some Survivor, get you acclimated to 2019. And they're like, oh, this is great. And they're like, oh my God, is that Boston, Rob, and Sandra? Like, why do they look so old? And why are they in like a car trunk making comments about people?
Making, as Jenny said, the Captain Obvious of obvious comments. Well, although in my family, it's Professor Obvious, so.
Oh, wow. Oh,
you got a doctorate in, degree.
Yeah. In being obvious.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
Sorry, we're not all academics here, Liana.
No,
I'm a lowly captain.
So I guess, I don't know, does that make you transition from like a career in the military to academia?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I actually don't know which one is more prestigious. I feel like being a captain is actually probably more impressive. I don't know.
Like I said, I'm the hobo outside. I'm vagrant,
yeah.
Obvious.
Is vagrant obvious? Is Captain Crunch? Isn't he like not actually a captain if you look at his stripes
or
something?
Well, Leon, I don't want to break this to you. Captain Crunch is not real. But
and get it right, Liana. It's Captain Crunch.
That's true. Actually, I think
I'm going to pull
that's
a
the
coach
rest of the reason and why is because like maybe he changed his first name to Cap'n. We thought, okay, enough people will sort of assume I'm a captain because I changed my name to it. They don't realize that I'm actually a big fraud.
Yes.
Yeah, he got kicked down, and so he's like, I'll just drop a few letters. I'm Cap'n Crunch.
See, it's not infringement. I'm Cap'n.
Yeah, that's well. The people don't know this. The military actually works a lot like the basketball game Horse, where you gain letters as you make your way through. And he just dropped out before he got the TAI to finish off his title.
Ah, that makes sense. So there is an NPR story about this is the title of the NPR story. He's an imposter, the Navy says about Cap'n Crunch.
Oh, God.
Yes, apparently. His stripes are for a U.S. Navy commander. Uh-huh. So it's the wrong rank. So I don't know if Cap'n, like you guys said, it's just his name. So he's like actually Commander Cap'n Crunch. Not entirely sure how that works.
Well, speaking of someone who knows their way
around. Can we
do? Go ahead.
No, I was just already thinking of a Brant Steele of like serial characters, and I don't think anyone needs that in their life, but I'm really wondering how Cap'n Crunch does in Survivor.
Well, it's interesting because I believe Kellogg actually recently released a box called like All Together Now or something with like six mascots all together where they just mixed all the cereals together. So maybe they were going for like a one world concept.
What?
One
that
box.
Sounds disgusting. One box.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Just like the season, the cereal will also be terrible.
It's a direct quality of the Survivor season. Well, speaking of someone who knows the way around being a captain or cap'n, as it were, let's get into our preseason thoughts on Mr. Tom Laidlaw, the Canuck himself, ends up going out here. There's a bit of a debate as to whether or not he was swapped, screwed, whether or not he sort of wrote his own fate. But Liana, how did you think Tom was going to do preseason?
Okay, so Tom, first of all, in response to your question, Mike, about what soup he would be, he said he was a hearty soup like New England chowder and goes with a beer.
Can I also say that he was by far the person I was most afraid of when I asked this question? Like, everyone in the cast was so surprisingly game when I asked them this admittedly very stupid question. And I was afraid Tom would just look at me and be like, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm not going to answer that, you dumb kid. No, soup, what the hell are you talking about? This interview's over." And then just, you know, walk off into the jungle. But no, he was surprisingly game.
Okay, he was okay when he answered. It wasn't a begrudging, like, "This is so weird. I guess New England, like, clam chowder."
If he did
or whatever.
He at least didn't show on his face. So I'm grateful that he at least has a filter, if that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, why is this guy asking me this?
Kind of like kids these days with their hoverboards and their soups.
And delivering milk by drones.
Right. Yes, exactly. Delivering soup by drone. That's what we have to get into, Mike. Okay. So for my prediction, I had Tom as part of the pre-jury. And I said that unlike a hearty New England chowder, Tom was taken out because he wasn't as strong as the other players. He got along well with everybody, but just didn't fit in with the other intense game players on his tribe, being a more old school player. These factors, combined with the crumbling of the Chowder Alliance, led to an easy decision for his tribe. Tom skated off to pre-jury to have a beer.
Wow, Liana, you were like nearly right on the money there.
I know,
yeah,
that's kind of crazy.
Good.
I don't know what the Chowder Alliance is. I'd have to go back and look at my other predictions. I'm sure it makes
sense. I'm pretty sure it was him, Aaron, and Elizabeth. Because those are, you know, Aaron and Elizabeth are the Rhode Islanders, so I'm pretty sure they both said Chowder as well. So I think you sort of assumed a Chowder triumvirate on Lyro.
Yeah, Aaron was definitely part of it because he said, yeah, the Red Manhattan Clam Chowder. So yeah, that was like close-ish.
Yeah, no, I mean, you definitely nailed like how he was perceived as less strong. And then some of his tribe members, I think Nora was very outright about that in between cackling at tribal council. You spoke about him having an old school mentality. He was that candid about it in my exit interview with him as well, where he basically said like, yeah, I mean, I had a very straightforward strategy purposely to the point where apparently they asked him like, "Hey, do you have an alliance with the other four members of Lyra on the other tribe?" And he's like, "Yeah." And so, which is not admittedly,
yes.
Tommy, not a great reason thing to say in front of people who might want to keep you. You know, I'd say do what your other two members did and try to like sell your old tribe down the river. But that's Tom for you. He's happy with the way he played. So, you know, you can't fault him too much.
Yeah.
Loyal to the soil.
Loyal to the soil. Oh, man, we're getting so many good catchphrases from this. My favorite is still Captain Vagrant or whatever. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there are so many intense game players on this season. And so almost having somebody like a Tom around who is going to be so stable, like, OK, sure, he's with the other Lyra members, but you know at least what he's going to do. Whereas if you have somebody who's more unpredictable, is that almost more of a threat to keep around? You know, do you want someone like Tom, who really is super straightforward? I don't know.
It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so many ways that you can look at it, because, you know, like, you see how Karishma is flipping. And even at the tribal council where she's like, I don't know who told me, like, I don't know who was behind the plan and I don't care. That was kind of an interesting point. And I noticed that they showed Kelly's face at that point too, where she was kind of like, interesting. You know, she's basically saying like, these people bailed me out last tribal and I already don't care about owing them a favor. Mm-hmm. And you know, as Vokai, you have to, or original Vokai, you have to like look at that and being like, okay, well, she's flipping to us because she feels like she has no options. But like, how are we supposed to believe that if we save her here, that she's going to, you know, feel like she's indebted to us and actually stick with us? You know, how soon before she flip-flops another way because she doesn't feel like she owes anyone anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that maybe also her flipping is also predictable potentially. But like you said, you don't know when potentially it's going to happen. Will she then remain loyal to the people who saved her? Right. I mean, that's sort of up in the air as well. So
yeah. And you have to wonder if someone like Tom is like going to say, you know, your decision to keep me shows some loyalty and I will repay that loyalty back. Or is it just like the first people that he made an alliance with, he's never going to turn his back on? So it's, mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, it seems like it's the latter. At least that's what he told me. So it seemed like they had like an accurate read on there. Janet had some really interesting opinions this episode, and she, a really interesting episode for her in general. There's a secret scene that's really great from this week where Janet spears some fish. She pulls a Josh Wiggler for her tribe, and she has this really great emotional, tearful confessional about how she's like, she wanted to be the provider to show older women out there that like, you can do whatever the hell you want to. I know Tom wanted to do that as well, that they really wanted to prove that age really is just a number. But she had some very interesting points about like how, you know, Tom really fell into her pocket, but at the same time, because he's so straightforward, it's almost a weakness to him. I mean, Kelly sort of made the same argument with Dean of like, hey, he has the strength of him being very trusting and loyal to me. But is he so loyal to me that he can be so loyal to anybody, meaning that he's actually a threat? It really just shows how literally any facet, any component of someone's personality or gameplay in Survivor can be taken one of two ways. It just depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm. Fine, there's no straightforward way to play the game. Got it, Mike. Nuance.
We're all about nuance here on the BNB. For what it's worth, I was a little more bullish on Mr. Laidlaw after watching him at that first tribal council. So I had him making the jury. I said he would win at least one individual challenge, which would earn him commendations from his competition of like, wow, Tom, you know, oldest guy to play in like 7 seasons, ends up winning a challenge. I said that Jeff Probst would ask him at least one time to relate what's going on at Tribal Council to hockey, which I'm very glad that at the number of times that Lyra went that, you know, they were holding off on that because I can imagine how much they wanted Tom to talk about Wayne Gretzky. And I said that he would be one of those people that like gets booted as like the safe option in his minority alliance because everyone figures he's the least likely to have an idol. I said his closest ally would be Tommy and his worst enemy would be Vince, which I guess ended up happening when the brief time that Vince was here, right?
Yeah, and then he was never on a tribe with Tommy, though.
Yeah, because I had him making the merge. I was like, okay, who's he most likely to bond with? You know, it seemed like he fell back in good with Aaron. I would have said him, but considering that, from when I left Fiji, Aaron was on the outside looking in, and I had assumed pretty primed to go. I was like, okay, I don't really want to think they'd have a good relationship. But I think of those guys on the other side, I would think that Tom would get along with Tommy really well as like a straightforward, logical, sporty guy.
Mm-hmm. Mike, do you think that if we had gotten Tom and Tommy together at the at the merge, would we have like needed to start calling Tom Laidlaw so that like we didn't get confused? Would it have been like a Jackson, aka Mickey, sort of Big Brother 21 thing where we can't have a Tom and a Tommy? That's way too confusing. So now suddenly we're calling Tom Laidlaw.
Well, first of all, we already have someone obsessed with watermelon on this cast, so I don't think we can have the Mickey comparison be completely apt. But yeah, I could imagine Probst calling him Laidlaw because that was the thing with Culpepper, right? Because Jeff admitted that he sort of had this like sports obsession with Brad Culpepper that he wanted to call him from his last name as if he was a sports announcer. So I could imagine him finding an excuse to do the same thing with Tom if him and Tommy made the merge together.
Also, Laidlaw is a pretty good last name. Like I didn't remember Tommy's last name. It's Sheehan. Laidlaw's better. So I think it would definitely be Laidlaw and Tommy if we're going to go the, you know, the last name route. Again, you know, that combined with the whole sports thing, I think makes the most sense. So
I just wanted a moment of like Tom voting somebody out and being like, it's Laidlaw laying down the law and like just like putting his vote in the urn. Like, I don't know. I just thought that would be pretty badass. You know, missed opportunity.
You know what? That actually brings up a question of if they are voting, like, let's say they're at the merge, right? And it's Tom and Tommy. How will they know which vote is for which? You could just be like, I don't know. I voted for Tom.
I call him Tommy.
Specify? Yeah, right. That's just what I call him. I mean, you know, bye-bye Denver Diva.
We all know that, like, you know, spelling and getting the name right is not important. We saw Tom has voted for Karishma how many weeks and he still wrote Karishna. Like it was like K-I-R-I-S-H-N-A, I think. Like, so, you know, I don't know how much they're really caring about, you know, how they're writing the names down on the parchment.
That's what I'm saying. It could get confusing. You don't know who they're voting for.
Well, it's like what happened with Wigglesworth and Wentworth in Second Chance. Right, maybe you just have to give the last names to them both at that point.
Yeah, but yeah. Sheehan, Laidlaw. Oh, that's so Laidlaw. Cool. That's such a badass last name. Laying down.
Honestly, when I first saw his name, I thought that he like might have had something to do with school buses because like Laidlaw is like a bus company in Canada, like a very like well-known school bus line. And so to find out that he had nothing to do with, well, maybe he, I don't know. I don't think because he talked about like a farm and stuff and he was obviously a hockey player. It's nothing
buses.
To do with school buses. Yeah, I guess so.
I think those are mostly wild. Farm. I don't think you could farm those.
Oh, Tommy, go out into the fields, pick those buses. It's harvesting time.
Well, I saw in New Haven there's the B&B Transportation Inc, which was on the side of a bus. I got super excited.
Did you get on the bus?
So I thought that it was like a school bus, like children on it. I felt
that's actually how I got there to the B&B. Is I just hopped on that bus and then just got dropped off outside, and so that's how I'm here.
A partnership with Laidlaw buses as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Jenny, as per want, we've been doing this season. We've had our guests come in and teach us lessons, and boy, we have learned so much about the world in the past 3 weeks. And I'm excited to hear from you, whether in Spanish or English, about what you have to bring to the table this week.
Yes, adelante, chicos. Come on in, guys. I'm going to teach you a lesson. So I don't know a lot about anything, to be honest, but there is one thing that I have an interest in that is a little out there, and I have found a way to actually, you know, look at Survivor through that lens. And so I figured that, you know, this was the perfect time to give a little bit of a snippet of my knowledge on this subject. I am a crazy astrology person.
Yay.
And so I've actually, this is like one of the nerdiest things besides writing parody songs about Survivor episodes, you know, filled with all sorts of dick puns. Besides that really nerdy thing I do, another nerdy thing I do is I actually have been keeping a spreadsheet of all of the Survivor contestants and their birthdays and their star sign. So, and then I've been kind of tracking some data on, you know, what signs do well, what ones tend to win the most, what average placement is. Very, very cool things. So anyway, I thought I would give you a very compressed lesson on the traits of the signs, a couple examples of some survivors that I think might embody some of the traits. And then if it's okay, I have a quick little, I'll quiz you guys on the current Island of the Idols contestants left in the game to see if you guys can figure out where Ooh. They fall in terms of astrology.
Oh my gosh. One, I'm very excited. Two, I'm super excited. I also would like you to tell me we can do this at the end. I would like to learn. I know I'm a Pisces, but I don't really know about that. And I'm hoping that Pisces do well on Survivor, even though I feel like that might not be the case.
So the thing about astrology is that it's incredibly complicated. And like me as someone who I feel like I know a bit like a bit about it, I have not even scratched the surface of how complicated it can get. So oftentimes like people will be like, oh, well, I know I'm this, but like I've read about it and like I don't really super relate to it. The truth is that you have more than just your sun sign, which is like determined by the date that you're born. But if you find out when you're actually born and like, you know, where you're born, where the planets were aligned at the time that you were birthed, can determine all sorts of things about your personality. I obviously don't have time to get that deep today, so I'm going to give you just some, you know, very basic, you know, stereotypes about these signs. And, you know, in the off time, if anyone ever wants to know a little bit more, pull up a seat. I'm happy to tell you. So the signs are divided by four elements. So there's 12 signs. They're divided by four elements, and there's three signs that fall into each element. So I'm going to start with the air signs. So air, we've got Aquarius, which is late January, early February birthdays. On the positive end, they're, you know, very intelligent, inquisitive, they're friendly. On the negative side, they can kind of sometimes seem cold and detached. And they can also be a little bit stubborn. I tried to think of a couple survivors that they're also kind of seem as like the kind of, they can be a little bit wacky too. But they're definitely intellectuals. The examples of Aquarius I pulled were, and again, you're probably going to be like, what? But I can find reasons for why these people are Aquarius. Our friend Stephen Fishback.
I can see that. Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And Kim Spradlin.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see those. Kim, I feel like, is like, I wouldn't say she's cold, right? I mean, she had a really, really great social game, but, you know, very much an intellectual. I could see
that. And she's not necessarily wacky, but I feel like being able to typify people with what animals they resemble is like a pretty quirky,
right?
You know, true. Factoid.
And like when I say cold, like they are, you know, Aquarians are definitely friendly and like social people. They're all air signs tend to be on the social side and the friendly side. But it's more so like a stoicness or and I mean, we saw Kim, you know, make friends with everyone and then, you know, also betray them all. So anyway, that is the Aquarius. I'll move on to the Gemini. So Gemini is late May, early June. They are very witty, funny people. They're very versatile, adaptable. On the negative end, they can be seen a little bit as aloof and sometimes unreliable. And the two examples that I've pulled for Gemini are Tyson and Jay Starrett.
Yep. Could definitely see that.
Yeah, I can see those too. Yeah, especially Tyson.
Yes.
Does that mean you have to have long hair to be a Gemini? Is that also a part of it?
So funny you should say that. Two of the three Gemini winners. So there's only been three Gemini winners. Two of the three are Tyson and Fabio.
Yeah, there is something to it.
The third one is Nick Wilson. So he kind of broke that mold.
No, sense. No, well, he has a lot of hair on his chest. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. Gemini are the twins. So you have to have the amount of hair of two people combined.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You got
oh, man.
It.
I think I Jenny, you're giving me ideas for my predictions for next season.
Perfect.
I honestly based on this.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at some of the trends and how you can use it to predict some things. So moving on to the Libra, which is the final of the three air signs, that is late September, early October. They're very cooperative. They work well with others. They're people, and they're charming. On the other hand, they definitely can be seen as indecisive, conflict averse, and also, you know, on the theme of the air sign, they can be sometimes unreliable. The examples of Libra, I've got Joey Amazing, Joe Anglim, and our fearless leader, Rob Sesternino.
Oh, people.
Yes.
That's interesting. I would not necessarily put Joey Amazing and Rob in the same bucket.
See, you wouldn't think, but like, I think that they're, you know, listen to what Rob has said about Joe, is that like everyone thinks that, Rob says he's just like a really genuinely nice guy and he's always so friendly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people had that to say about Joe as well. So it's funny when you group some of these people together, you might say like they're not so much the same, but you can find some commonalities between them. And that's when all of the other astrological stuff come into play. So yeah, it's complicated, but I definitely see a lot of Libra traits in both of those too.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm very friendly, nice people, right? Is what they definitely have in common for sure.
Yeah. And so how you might remember air signs is they're a little bit flighty. They kind of bounce around. They're friendly. But they can be a little bit, unreliable or, hard to pin down. Okay. So moving on to the earth signs. First, we have got Capricorn. So that Capricorn is late December, early January. Capricorns are hard workers. They're very goal oriented. They're determined. They're a little bit on the cautious end, but they can also be incredibly stubborn and immovable. And so the examples, fun fact, Capricorn is the most winning sign.
Oh.
So we've got the most winners that are Capricorn.
That's so interesting because I think they're not like promoting the big moves mentality.
Exactly. So the examples that I will give for Capricorn is Denise Stapley. And, there's a lot of other options, but since he's on our screen every week, Boston Rob.
Oh,
Boston Rob.
Yeah. So then we've got our Taurus. Taurus is late April, early May. Taurus, they're really dependable. They're good friends. They're there for you. They're very sensual. They can be stubborn as well, though, and a little bit on the lazy side. I have found Taurus the hardest to pin down in terms of survivors. The examples I have given are Malcolm and Michelle Fitzgerald.
Is that an earth sign trait that they're stubborn?
Yes, it definitely can be.
Like they're on the ground, like they're people of the earth, salt of the earth.
Yeah.
Stub your toe.
They're solid. They're down to earth. They're dependable, but they're also, they're grounded in their beliefs and a little bit hard to move.
I will say, Angela Bloom is also a Taurus as well. So I think you could put her up there, I guess, with the survivor adjacent example.
There you go. And so finally, we have the Virgo. Virgo is late August, early September. They're helpful. They're practical, analytical. But on the negative end of that, that comes with being kind of, overcritical, a little bit judgmental. When I think of textbook Virgo, Bradley Claggy. Because you can just see him being like that whole sound bit of him just being like, oh, it's so dirty. Like, Virgos are very organized and thorough, and he's exactly that kind of person. So,
oh my gosh, it's so
okay.
Funny.
Sorry, I'm gonna keep moving through this fast, and sorry that this is taking so long. But
no, that's okay.
I hope you can find some interest in this.
No, this is interesting. Actually, the Bradley. So, speaking of Bradley, I was going through my notes the other day, and I found a Casuals Corner from when Bradley was voted out, and there was so many comments about his tiny mouth. And I just wanted to remind everybody that that was a thing.
Is that a facet of being an earth sign? Is you have a very tiny mouth?
I don't know.
Yes.
But someone did say Bradley's small mouth makes him untrustworthy. So I don't know how that fits into astrology, but I just needed to remind everyone. A casual said that.
So many criticisms coming out of such a tiny mouth. So
I know, it's amazing.
Okay, so on to fire signs. So first we've got Aries. Aries is late March, early April. Aries is very passionate. They have a lot of energy, but they can be a little bit arrogant. They're a little bit argumentative. So they, you know, they kind of, they're strong in their beliefs, and they are very passionate about their beliefs, and they have no problem arguing that with you. So some examples of Aries: Randy Bailey, Natalie Anderson, and Richard Hatch.
Classic. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
I like those.
So then we've got the Leo. So that is late July, early August. They are very loyal, straightforward, kind of honest people. But they have a tendency to be, you know, very self-centered and egotistical, and also a little bit impatient. So examples of Leos, I've got Troyzan. And, you know, again, got to take it back to this season. Our two-time winner, Sandra Diaz-Torres.
Yeah.
Or say a Leo and a Capricorn in the booth there.
Exactly. Yeah. And then finally for the fire sign, we've got Sagittarius. They are super adventurous, exciting people. They're also very straightforward, straight shooters. But on the dark side of that, that can also come with being a bit blunt, a little bit tactless at time. And they also can have a tendency to be a little bit disconnected. And so the examples I am using for Sagittarius is Michaela and Shane Powers.
That's great.
Yeah. And then finally, we land at the water signs. To remember the fire signs, obviously very fiery, passionate, you know, blunt. So water
and
signs.
Sandra.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. Remember Sandra. Like,
there's just certain people that embody it so much that you can just be like, okay, that person. Yeah. Okay, so we've got Pisces. So sharing a sign with Liana. So Pisces is late February, early March. They are creative. They're very imaginative. They can also be on, you know, they're big creative people, but they can also be a little bit sensitive and easily hurt. And they also have a tendency to be a little bit escapist. Examples of Pisces that I've used here are David Wright and Hannah.
Yeah, definitely don't do the escapism thing. That's why I'm here at the B&B, a fictional world we've created where we play games.
Leon, I'm so sorry to feed your habits.
Yeah, really, please don't enable me.
Yeah, as a Leo Virgo cusp, I feel both overly critical of your escapism, yet happy that I'm so self-centered you picked me to join you in it.
Exactly. It's perfect. I feel like David Wright and Hannah fit it pretty well because they're both, especially in the ways that they connected on Millennials versus Gen X, that they're like, they're both kind of sensitive, like anxious people, but they're both like creatives. They're both like writers, like comedic writers. So I thought that those two being Pisces was very apt. Okay, so then we have the Cancer. Cancer is like what I like to call the mom of, like the mom sign. They're very nurturing, they're faithful, but on the dark side of it, they can be a little bit smothering and they have a tendency to be a little bit on the moody side. So the examples I've drawn for Cancer are Don Meehan and, of course, Liana's favorite, Suri Fields.
Oh, I love Suri. Oh, we're both water signs. Oh, that makes me happy. Okay.
And then finally, this is the last one. We've got the Scorpio. We are in Scorpio season right now. It is late October, early November. Scorpio are very intense people. They're incredibly intuitive, but they are also faithful. On the other end, that can come with some jealousy, and they also can tend to be a little bit secretive. They can take a little bit to show their cards with someone. It comes with the general mistrust of others. The examples that I've drawn of Scorpio are Aubrey and Dominic. So Aubrey, I see as someone who's very like intuitive. Like I found her to be a very intuitive player. And Dominic is just an incredibly intense presence, I feel. So that was kind of why I chose him.
So you talked about Capricorns. The most winners were Capricorns.
Yes.
What is the worst sign to be if you're going to play Survivor? Just based on the numbers.
Well, we've got a representative of every sign.
Well, that's good.
But there's been a couple signs. So the two signs where we only have one winner are Scorpio and Sagittarius. By far the most signs are Earth. So Earth seems to be the biggest winner, followed by fire, then air, then fire, then water. Wow. But between fire, air, and water, there's like, it's pretty similar. I think there's like a difference between one between them, but Earth is definitely the leading. So
if I want to insult someone using a sign, what would be the one that would be like, you're being a real Capricorn right now?
Yeah, who's like the butt monkey of the zodiac?
Like the one friend that everybody picks on, you know, like which one is that?
Well, I mean, like they all have their negative aspects. I feel like the two of the signs that get a lot of flack, Scorpio gets a lot of flack. They're definitely seen as like the crazies of the zodiac. But the other one is, that I see getting a lot of hate is actually Gemini, because they can, you know, the twins, they can be seen as a little bit two-faced.
Cut your hair, Geminis.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just going to say, like, if you've ever looked at the list of famous Geminis, there's some not so great people on that list. And Donald Trump is a Gemini. I'm not going to get political, but like, if, you know, in your spare time, if you ever want to look at famous Gemini, there's not a lot of great names, but there's amazing people in every sign. There's so much more to it than just your sun sign. If you guys don't mind, I would love to, give you guys your own little game where I'm going to go through the remaining players in the game. And I'm not going to make you guess the actual sign because that would be too hard. But I want you to guess whether they're an air sign, an earth sign, a fire sign, or a water sign.
I like this because it's a little bit of magic as well, considering the history of winners in all these signs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Before we get into that, I just want to say, Mike, based on your comment of like, cut your hair, Geminis, that will be the new insult for like cut your hair hippies.
Yeah.
Yeah, hippies.
Damn Geminis loitering outside the library when I'm trying to drop off my books.
It was Geminis and their drone milk. I don't know.
Love it. Okay. So let's just do this in alphabetical order, which means I'm gonna go to Liana first. Liana, what do you think Aaron is?
A fire sign.
Correct. He is a Sagittarius. So we got 1 point for Liana. All right. So then we're going to go to, alphabet's hard. Okay. Dan.
I was going to say it.
Mike, what do you think
Don't
Dan
worry,
is?
Jenny, it's not the Spanish alphabet, so I think you're okay. There's no NAs or double Rs. Dan, I think Dan, I'm going to go between two. I'm going to say Dan is an earth sign.
I'm sorry, no. What was your second
guess? I was thinking
fire. No, double wrong. I'm sorry.
Oh, no,
I'm
a Gemini!
No, Dan is a Cancer.
That's what they also said about Dan in the first episode.
Fun fact, I actually tested this game out on the great Phil T, and he actually got Dan perfectly to the sign where he was like, Dan, I feel like he's a little nurturing, a little touchy. Is he a Cancer? And so, you definitely can make that that parallel.
Answer the Cancer.
So, unfortunately, exactly.
Now we can remember.
Okay. So now we'll go back to Liana. Liana, what do you think Dean is?
Oh, Dean. Sweet baby Dean. I'm going to say Dean is a air sign.
I'm sorry, no. Dean is a fire sign. He is an Aries. Okay, so it's still 1-0 for Liana. We'll go back to Mike. We're going to go to Elaine. Ooh. Nope. Yes, we're going to Elaine. What do you think Elaine is?
It's time to say Earth because she likes to wrestle people down to the Earth. But I feel like she is. I'm going to say Air.
You should have gone the Kellen way, trusted your gut on this one. She is an Earth sign. She is a Capricorn. Yeah, so she the most winning sign, she's a Capricorn.
Elaine, our winner. So, it's done.
And so back to Liana. Elizabeth. What is Elizabeth?
If she's not a water sign, something's gone horribly wrong. Right?
She's not a water sign.
She's a swimmer.
I know, you'd think, but no, she's a Leo. Oh. She's a fire sign.
There's a lot of fire signs.
Okay, so, yeah.
And she couldn't even start a fire against Boston Rob.
I know, right? So, isn't that funny? Okay, back to Mike. So, we are going to the J's now, the many J's we've got. What is Jack?
Ooh. I mean, you could go with the direct Joey Amazing comparison and say air. I'm going to go with air. Yeah, I'll go with air for hair.
You are correct. He is a Gemini. The long-haired Geminis continue.
It's definitely a real thing. And
it's a thing. It's a thing.
Definitely not a coincidence.
I'll have to go back and see exactly how many Geminis that have played have long hair now that we've got all of this
data. Do you know
data.
What Ozzy is?
Ozzy, I think, is a Virgo.
Ah, okay. Well, I mean, I don't know. I've seen videos that proved he is not.
I think you're mispronouncing word wrong, Mike.
Incredible. Okay, so Liana back. So it's tied 1-1. We're going to go back to Liana. What is Janet?
Janet is Earth.
It's a good guess, but no, Janet is also a Gemini. What? She is an air sign.
Wow.
I know. And her hair's short, so I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's only the guys have long hair. We'll see. Okay, back to Mike. Oh, I went out of alphabetical order. Sorry. That.
Okay, give me my winner pick. Give me Jamal.
Whatever. Yeah, Jamal. So
oh,
what is
boy.
Jamal?
All right, Jamal. Jamal seems like an Earth guy to me. He's very much like stay the course. He was very much first gear. And I know he has a little bit of a malevolent side to him, but I feel like he's an Earth guy through and through.
Correct. He is a Taurus. So we've got, so Mike has 2 points. Liana has 1. We're going to go to Jason.
Okay. Oh, man. He seems a little stubborn, but he also seems very passionate. Yeah, I'm going to go with fire.
You are correct. He is a Leo.
Nailed it.
2-2. Okay. Now we're going to go back to Mike. Mike, what is Karishma?
Oh boy. Karishma. Oh, this is tough because she's like very passionate and emotional, but she comes from that clinical lawyer angle. No, I'm going to say fire. I feel like she has that fire.
Correct. Karishma is a Sagittarius.
Get out of here, Mike.
Okay.
Being a real Scorpio right now.
Back to Liana. Liana, what is Kelly?
Okay, Kelly. I'm going to say Kelly is an air sign.
Correct. She is a Libra. So we are tied at 3. And we are going back to Mike. Mike, what is Lauren?
Ooh, Lauren. See, Lauren's like so bubbly and cheerful. It makes me think air, but she also is a bit creative, so I could go with the water thing. Or she has a bit of the fire, so she has I'll go with fire.
I'm sorry, no, she is a water sign. She's actually a Scorpio. Okay, so we're going back to Liana, and you are going to tell me what Missy is.
Okay. Oh, man. I'm going to go with fire.
Ugh. I'm sorry. No. Also, another water sign.
What?
Also a Cancer.
Oh, man. That wasn't even my second guess.
Okay. So now we are going to Nora. Mike, what is Nora?
Is there some sort of fifth sign that just like exists outside of the other four?
Yeah, it's like there's the tastes, right? It's like, you know, sweet, salty.
Oh, yeah,
it's,
she's the umami.
Yeah.
I honestly am dying to do Nora's full chart so I can see like all of the components of her, because I just want to understand
her so much. Oh boy, I'm gonna say fire. I think she's so driven, and there is a bit of flightiness that comes with the air, as we've seen from just her outright laughing at Jeff in the middle of tribal council. But I feel like that's what her primary motivator is. So I'm gonna go with fire.
You know, a lot of sense behind those guesses, but believe it or not, Nora is an Earth sign. She is a Virgo, which when you think about it, you can see it when in that episode where she was very critical of, you know, what everyone was doing. She was kind of annoyed that people weren't helping out around camp. So you can definitely see some of that perfectionism in Nora. But yes, you're right. There's got to be some air and fire influence in Nora's personality. So unfortunately, Mike, you did not get that right. So Liana, we're back to the last one on the board in Tommy. So this is your opportunity to win this stupid game that I have created. What is Tommy?
Oh man. Okay. I'm going to go with air.
It's a good guess, but no, unfortunately, Tommy is a Scorpio. It's actually his birthday today.
Oh my God.
Happy birthday, Tommy.
Happy birthday, Tommy. Yes.
Or Sheehan.
So I guess no one won. Or we all win. Because I've enriched you with this very incredibly important knowledge that you can take in to your life. You know, I found astrology very helpful in terms of just kind of trying to understand other people. It's wacky. It's, you know, you don't have to believe in it, but it's just a fun way to like put people into boxes and try to understand people. So
yeah, I mean, look, we took a quiz called The Animal and You from theanimalandyou.com. Okay.
I love that quiz.
We're all about getting sorted into random things. We had somebody send us a BuzzFeed quiz called What Kind of Soup Are You? So like, look, we're all about putting ourselves in random categories and looking at the world that way. Maybe that's just the Virgo in me, but this was awesome. I really liked this. And, so I guess as a recap, who are Earth signs from this season? Who should we be looking at? And do we think those are our legitimate winner contenders?
So we've got Elaine left in the game. We've got Elaine, Jamal, and Nora in the Earth signs. Could that be our final three? I don't know.
I want that to be that final three so badly.
It'd be incredible.
That would be amazing.
I honestly think that Jamal, I don't know. I think that this has been a good turning point for his game. You know, him and Jack being together on this swap tribe, and now they're in a position where, you know, the other Vokai actually need them. Mm-hmm. I think that has actually changed his positioning in the game. And, you know, so he was kind of down and out before, but I think that he's not in the worst place. So mm-hmm. I would love to see Jamal go far in the game.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. I know. Wait, is that Mike? Is that your who did you have?
Yeah, I had Jamal, Josh,
you
and
have
Chelsea.
Jamal. Yeah, right. Yeah, so that obviously benefits Chelsea. You. So
Chelsea's a Pisces. It might explain the tears.
Oh, Chelsea, my Pisces sister.
Yes.
Okay. Well, speaking of fish, my dad, that was the weirdest transition.
I don't know where you're going with this, but
let's talk about
judge the segue until after we get to the other side of the bridge, shall we?
Exactly. Okay, so I want to introduce our first game from our side. So I don't have a good name for this. I have Trick or Tweet or what sponsor said it. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, the point is that I went to the social media accounts of sponsors for both current, aka Applebee's, or previous sponsors of Survivor. So the game is going to be for the two of you to try to, and we'll go back and forth, to try to guess which sponsor said this tweet. And so there's only two options. It's a 50-50 shot. All right. Okay. So the first showdown we're going to do is Outback versus Applebee's. So you have to guess whether or not this was said by the Outback Steakhouse Twitter account or the Applebee's Twitter account.
The old boo versus the hot new thing.
Exactly.
New hotness.
Ooh, girl.
Yeah, it's the boyfriend meme, right? Where the boyfriend's Survivor and the girlfriend is Outback and the new person is Applebee's.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Which, by the way, okay, I know everybody's like making fun of Applebee's. I would happily go to Applebee's, okay? I'm a basic bitch and it's fine by me.
I'm honestly like, I just honestly think that was actually an incredible reward, because like they're getting protein. The food actually looked kind of good. Like they had choices of like different meats. There was spinach artichoke dip. And did you see the size of the beer they got? Yeah. Like they were getting like actual like full pints of beer. Like that honestly wasn't the worst reward. So I can sort of understand the level of excitement. I would not get that excited in my real life to go to Applebee's, but I mean, it was a pretty solid reward.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that, I mean, personally, I can't not associate Applebee's with like post show cast get togethers when everyone's still in their show makeup and like sharing appetizers at Applebee's. That's just the memory that's stuck in my head. But I mean, I know people were also sort of complaining about like, wow, they're really overdoing it with talking about how much they love Applebee's, with Tommy giving the thumbs up and Karishma saying it's her favorite sit down restaurant, which is the most specific statement I've ever heard in quite some time. But like, this is no different than Sandra proclaiming her love for the Outback in Heroes versus Villains, or even back in like season 2 of Jerry saying like, do the do, baby, with Mountain Dew. Survivors have been whoring themselves out to sponsors for years. Frankly, I'm just happy we have this back because it's a fun talking point, and it also means that like, I think brands are smartly investing in Survivor because, as Rob said on one of his podcasts this week, there is not any marketing better for a restaurant than like having starving people just salivating over whatever you're shoveling out in front of them.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. It made me want to go to Applebee's.
I've actually, there's not a lot of Applebee's in Canada, but there are a few. I've literally only been to one once in my life. It was probably like over a decade ago, and this like shitty dude that I was dating like took me to one, and like you could tell he was like very proud that like he paid for dinner, and I was like settle down, buddy, it's an Applebee's. But I had no standards.
Yeah,
so
that's where chivalry goes to die, in an Applebee's.
Yeah, exactly.
Such a nice date. All right, well, let's get to the task at hand. Mike, we'll kick things off with you. Okay, so this first tweet, you have to guess if it was from Outback Steakhouse or Applebee's. Nothing wrong with a little crustacean flirtation. # steak and lobster, # backed by popular demand.
Oh, listen, I unfortunately have an advantage here in that I did work at the back for 6 months, and I know that steak and lobster was a popular deal that I schlepped down many times from the kitchen. That's got to be an Outback.
That is correct. Yes, a little insider information here. Maybe we should just let Jenny win since that's our like thing here on the
yeah, B&B. Apparently, I just get, the scale is tipped in my favor in all these games this season.
Mm-hmm.
And like, let's be fair, is Applebee's known for their steak and lobster? Like,
no,
if that's what they're really trying to like proclaim as their like selling feature, then I don't know. We're all lost.
Yeah, that's true. OK, so this next tweet is for Jenny. Can we rename # National Watermelon Day to # National Watermelon Rita Day? Asking for a friend, ... watermelon emoji, sticking out tongue emoji.
Oh my God. You just had to bring the watermelon. Wow. Okay. You know what? Honestly, I think this is Applebee's for many reasons. Like, is this maybe foreshadowing that they, you know, did they tweet this during Survivor when, you know, Nora and Rob and Sandra were eating the watermelon? Yeah, I'm going to go with Applebee's on this one.
This was actually Outback.
Wow.
What?
I did not think Outback would put emojis in. I thought they'd be too professional. I was with Jenny. Yeah. That sounded totally Applebee's to me.
Yeah, I didn't remember the watermelon Rita, but apparently that's a thing, and it's at Outback, so, or it was at some one point in time.
Outback also really likes to, they're like Disney, and then they're like, oh, out from the Disney vault, it's our famous coconut shrimp. We put it away for 2 years, but now it's back for some reason.
Yeah, no, it is like that. I also like that your accent, so I don't know what it turned into by the end.
I would not lie and say that I'd say that 30% of the time I talk to customers in that voice.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
it's
no.
Part of your customer service.
Well, because like they'd be like, oh yeah, we love the commercials. I'm like, oh yeah, like the stupid like, oh, at Outback, we're gonna have big old steaks.
I want nothing more in my life than for you to serve me at Outback. In that voice, like, I just want one night only. Mike Bloom is my server, and speaking in that accent, that's
well,
all I want.
You're not probably gonna get your food to you in one piece because I will drop everything. I am very unseasoned when it comes to being a server.
Oh my god,
unlike the 17 herbs and spices used in our steaks at Outback.
Isn't that Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Oh,
or is that an Outback thing?
It's all the same. It's all the same.
Okay, throw a little shrimp on the babby. Okay. All right, let's get into the next one. All right, Mike, this is for you. Brutus was a key figure in the late Roman Republic.
What?
Brutus, B-R-E-W-T-U-S, is our signature glass for our craft beers, both equally as important to history and where we are today.
Jesus Christ.
That is a tweet.
Oh my God. Was that tweeted on the Ides of March? I'm so curious.
Oh my gosh, I don't know how to go.
I'm going to say,
oh my God.
I don't know why I would say this is so educational that I'm assigning it to this brand, but it's got to be Applebee's, right?
That was indeed Applebee's. Yes, you are correct.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
I can just picture like two like white bros high fiving themselves when they wrote that tweet, being like, haha, history.
And let's see, Mike, to answer your question, it was tweeted on October 18th.
Oh, so then, no, 5 months after the Ides of March.
Yeah, not exactly timed appropriately. I don't know if the bros that Jenny is describing would know that, but all right, Jenny, let's go back to you. Okay, this next tweet is feeling cute. Might shop for onions later. Hashtag feeling cute challenge.
Oh my God.
Okay. It's gotta be, we know the Bloomin' Onion, the Mike Bloomin' Onion is an Outback staple. It's gotta be Outback.
That is correct. Yes, it is the Outback Steakhouse. Yeah. There was one tweet I tried to figure out how to work it in. They were talking, Outback was like replying to somebody talking about someone's hair and like, oh, how do they style their hair? And then Outback responded, we are assuming he uses Bloom sauce.
Oh my god. That's like a Something About Mary kind of thing.
Yeah, that was my thought as well.
There's a reason why I don't work at Outback anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want you to serve me anymore.
Take it back. So Outback actually had another really funny tweet. Well, I don't know if it's funny, but it amused me. So do we all remember Hot Cop Dan?
Dan Ringering?
How could I forget? So, I follow him for his tweets because they're always so good and not in the way you think.
He's not self-aware. So when was he? Do you guys remember? Okay, what season was he on Survivor?
He was on two seasons ago.
David versus Glass.
Okay, so that was in 2018, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this was tweeted during the season, okay? Just so, like, this is when Hot Cop Dan was obviously at the height of his, 15 minutes of fame. Okay, Dan Ringering tweeted, if anyone's wondering what to get me for Christmas, I wear a size 1,420. $1,421,772 at Outback gift cards. And then he tweeted a photo of himself with a watermark on it. It's like he's like holding his hands and like bowing his head a little bit. They're not prayer hands, but he kind of looks like he's like a kid that just messed up and they're kind of like, oh, and he's got Christmas lights strewn all over him.
Is he like half naked, nearly naked? What's his body
status?
He's
wearing no. He does have clothes on in this one, which is unique. But Outback quote tweeted him and said, where should we deliver the 149,817 Bloomin' Onions? So a little bit of back and forth there.
Oh no, Dan! I know Dan has struggled with weight problems in the past. Does not help if he's getting almost 150,000 Bloomin' Onions to his house.
Why would he ask? First of all, I don't understand the number that he asked for. $1,421,772. Is that a thing?
I don't know.
It's not like, oh, I lost Survivor. I won $1,000,000 in Outback gift cards. It was like, here's a super random number from a random number generator. I don't get it.
But I mean,
do they even make gift cards in that denomination?
Yeah, I don't know if you can put in like a random amount. I don't think gift cards work like that.
I don't think so either. Or you got to get one of those like giant novelty checks.
If he's eating that much Outback Steakhouse, I'd be worried about getting Joe Del Campo at that point. That's a lot of beef.
Is Dan wearing a shirt that says "Fakuk Fake Foods"?
No. God, what a moment that was. Okay, all right. Let's move on to our next matchup. So this is Pringles versus Doritos.
Oh my God! Battle of the chips.
I gotta say, fun fact, I can't eat Pringles. They are not gluten free. There is wheat in Pringles, believe it or not. But all other chips are fine. Yeah. So I used to love Pringles, but I can't mess with the Pringles anymore. So I'm more of a Doritos gal, but we'll see what the choices are here.
So they're like not straight. I mean, I guess I don't know why I'm surprised they're not straight potatoes, but
yeah, there's like some sort of like flour like mushed into them. It's weird.
Great.
Yeah. Sorry for ruining your
shows. You can't print fun survivor facts on potatoes. It's got to be some sort of flour base to it.
Probably, yeah, you need that, like, the gumminess of it or something. I don't know.
That's true. Okay. All right, well, let's kick things off. Mike, this tweet is for you. Okay, so some of these tweets have the name of the chip in the tweet, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say chip, okay, in place of the... So, you know.
Got it.
All right, I don't want people to think I'm, like, making up these tweets, all right? Like, I got the tweets. Okay. All right, this tweet is, so do you guys prefer heating up your chips? Or do you like your chips straight out of the freezer?
Oh, ew. Neither? Can I go with the room temperature chips, please?
I like read this and was like, what the hell did I just read?
I don't want to freeze chips. I guess I prefer microwave chips. I guess?
It doesn't say microwave, it says heating up. Maybe you bake them. But they're already baked, right?
I guess... Ooh, I guess Pringles.
That was Doritos. You guys prefer heating up your Doritos, or do you like Doritos straight out of the freezer?
Maybe this is the Virgo in me. I would seriously judge somebody if they said, hey, you want some chips? I said, sure. They open up their freezer and grab a pack of Doritos.
Maybe they're good.
I would report them to an institution as soon as possible.
Like, I've heard of people putting, like, chocolate bars in the freezer, like a Reese's peanut butter cup or, you know, something like that. But, like, I don't understand the point of putting chips in the freezer.
I mean, like, I don't either.
Does it lock in the flavor somehow? I have so many questions.
Okay. All right. Next tweet. This is for you, Jenny. That the chicken sandwich war has died down, can we all just agree that any chicken sandwich is better when you put chips on it?
I feel like, would you put Doritos on a chip or on a sandwich? Because I've definitely seen people put like plain chips on a sandwich. Which I feel like, you know, there's no plain Doritos, but there are plain Pringles. So I am going to use that logic to say Pringles.
It was also Doritos.
Well, I was going to say, because I'm assuming with like the Doritos Locos Taco of it all, that they're all about like, yeah, put us on sandwiches, put us on whatever you want. Doritos work with everything, apparently.
Yeah, it is a good point.
Yeah. So that's actually all I have for the game for the chip segment, but I would like to just read a few other tweets. So Pringles was also getting in on this whole like history thing. The Romans built aqueducts. We built this liquid dispenser out of a Pringles can. I don't know.
Is that blue sauce?
Maybe it's, it holds some blue
sauce. So the blue sauce can be delivered to the ancient Romans via aqueduct.
Yeah, exactly. Also, Pringles really likes to respond to people who have ideas. They say, that's genius, you're the CEO now, and they just repeat that same phrase. So from what I can tell, based on reading all of this, everybody is the CEO of Pringles.
So Pringles is that one friend who like wants to repeat the same joke as if like they didn't think they heard you the first time?
Right, exactly. And so they're going to repeat it again because they think it's, or like they got a lot of likes the first time. So they're like, okay, we're just going to repeat this. One,
no one will notice.
Pringles also though came at somebody, so this was not a CEO of Pringles, but somebody said, $1 million idea. Why don't at Pringles make containers where you can push up the bottom? Once I get halfway through, my fat hands can't fit down the tiny tube. And Pringles just responded, get smaller hands.
Woof. Pringles.
I know. Straight
wow.
up rude.
Hand shaming in 2019.
And then the last one is from Doritos, and this one just made me laugh. To all of you who wonder what Cool Ranch even is, have never had a run-in with Uncool Ranch, and it shows.
So, oh my god.
I don't know what Uncool Ranch is, but maybe that tastes better coming out of the freezer. I'm not sure.
Do they mean like an actual anthropomorphized Uncool Ranch dressing, or like the Uncool Ranch?
Right, like it's
like
a place. Yeah.
A ranch of horses and
right.
These tweets are reminding me of one of my favorite Twitter accounts that is not always active, but when it is, it's putting out some good content. I think it's called Brand Saying Bay. It basically just retweets like all of the really cringy companies trying to be hip with the kids.
Awesome.
It's a really great Twitter follow for anyone who loves this sort of corny stuff coming from companies. So.
Well, yeah, I think that was the Outback thing, right? Liana, that tweet about like feel hot might get bloom sauce or whatever.
Feeling
like bloom sauce.
It was feeling cute might shop for onions later.
That's close.
Essentially the same thing.
Might get bloom sauced later.
Actually, Outback did tweet aliens like bloom and onions too, # Area 51, when Storm Area 51 was going on.
Oh,
so.
My
exactly.
God.
So topical.
I know, they're really on it. Okay, well, let's move into some more cringe tweets. This next matchup is Mountain Dew versus Coca-Cola. Okay.
Oh yeah, I forgot Coke was a sponsor of Survivor.
Yeah,
what season was
I tweeted
that?
Out about, like, I got a ton of replies. So thank you to everybody who helps me out with the sponsor game. All right. So this, Mike, this one is for you. Okay. This tweet is, wow, math is tight.
Oh my God.
That Mountain Dew or Coca-Cola.
I hope that the social media people behind Coca-Cola, because it is probably like the most upstanding of these of the soft drink brands, like they would want to compose themselves in a more wordy way. And so I feel like that's Mountain Dew.
That was indeed Mountain Dew. Math is tight. All right, Jenny, this is for you. Squat okay. up. You know what time it is. # National Burrito Day.
Oh no.
Oh my god.
What does that have to do with this soda?
What up?
I just want to jetpack out of my skin just hearing that tweet.
So good.
Squat up. Oh my goodness. Okay, I've been fooled twice, being the second question and it being the same answer as the first. I feel like that Mountain Dew is very like robe radical, like
more Mountain Dew.
I feel like that
math and
yeah
sight.
Like BMX bikers and like I don't know. I can't see Coke tweeting that. I feel like Coke is like a little bit more prestigious,
right? That's what I'm saying.
But that could be the trick here. Oh man, I'm really I've been wrong the last two times when I went with the opposite. So I will also go with Mountain Dew.
I realize the format of the quiz may have been in Mike's favor. It was Coca-Cola. Yeah.
No.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Coke, what are you doing? What is happening?
I will say in general, the Coke ones were like pretty with it. Actually, it seemed that the bigger the brand, the sort of like more boring their tweets were.
Yeah, because they don't have to pander.
Exactly. So like I was going to do, you know, like Ford versus Chevy. Right. And their tweets are just real freaking boring. So that's why we have Mountain
like,
Dew.
We're a car.
Yeah, if you're a Roman and you want to drive to the vomitorium, get in your Ford.
Yeah, instead, we get tweets like this from Mountain Dew. Poning has never tasted better. Drink new Mountain Dew Amp Game Fuel while you slay them all. Hashtag Mountain Dew Amp Game Fuel.
Oh my god.
Yeah, when they even hashtag themselves.
I know, it's awesome. Also, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm really worried that I'm making this up. On the topic of Bloom sauce, did you guys, like, when you guys were, like, young, did you guys ever have that rumor that, like, drinking Mountain Dew, like, lowered your sperm count?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, is that, like, I was, like, I didn't know if that was just, like, a thing that I heard.
Is that real? Or is it just rumor?
Absolutely not. No, they said that there was, like, yellow dye number 5 or something in Mountain Dew to give it that, like, lemon limey look, and so they said that was killing off sperm, but it turned out to be false. Either that or Mountain Dew changed its recipe, either or.
It's just as factual as, like, the green Skittles make you that H word that I refuse to say.
So on the topic of Mountain Dew on June 10th went in this frenzy of tweeting at KFC, and I'm like, it just comes out of the blue. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tweets in a row. It doesn't make any sense. And KFC is very confused. So they're just tweeting emojis. So it's like 7 lightning bolt emojis at KFC. Then they tweet again at KFC. Soda glass, handshake, soda glass handshake, soda glass handshake at KFC. KFC responds with the, like, huh? Like, tweet face where it's like up, you know, the, like, hand is like up near the chin and it's like, hmm? And then Mountain Dew just quote tweets and responds, peach emoji, honeypot emoji, peach emoji, honeypot emoji at KFC. Then KFC responds with the, like, wide-eyed blushing face emoji. And then Mountain Dew responds with peach emoji, honey emoji, arrow emoji, lightning bolt emoji, soda emoji, lightning bolt emoji, and then 2 exclamation point emojis.
Oh, my Anyways, God.
Is that saying, like, pour Mountain Dew in my ass?
I don't know. Something with the honey. I don't know what that means either. I'm, like, not entirely sure what this has to do with chicken. Anyway, so then they're, like, repeatedly tweeting these, like, very similar emojis at KFC for a while. So I don't think the KFC person ever got it. And then all of a sudden it's, like, done. It was, like, over the course of just one day, like, someone hacked their Twitter account and just, like, angrily, or I guess, I don't know, sexily tweeted to KFC. So anyway, that was very bizarre.
Did you witness, like, two brands sexting?
I think maybe, with emoji.
Or, like, it was very one-sided if that was the case, because one brand just did not understand whatsoever.
KFC was not into it. And it's weird because it's, like, the KFC, you know, image is, like, the picture of the Colonel. So it's, like, the Colonel is sexting with Mountain Dew, which is very bizarre. All right.
Can we have the Colonel versus Cap'n Crunch in this brand
too,
maybe?
Actually, we don't know who outranks who.
Yeah, I got to figure it out somehow.
Okay, well, so that's the end of the game I have. So, Mike, congratulations on winning. Although, you know, Jenny, I recognize the format. I pulled a real Kalish over here.
God. I didn't stand a chance.
You know what? How about this? So I had for a tiebreaker, how many followers does the Pontiac Twitter account have? Pontiac Aztec.
Specifically, Pontiac
Aztec.
Because I believe the Pontiac Aztec might have been one of the first car sponsors of the show. I remember Colby and his mom hanging out in a Pontiac Aztec.
Yes, exactly. So, Jenny, if you can guess, you're never going to guess it correctly. Like, never mind. I don't know. But if you guys want to take a guess, it's pretty funny.
Is it the same number that Dan Rangering wanted in dollars towards the
OPEX sticker? Not. I'll give you a hint. It's less.
I'm going to say it is 26,000 followers.
Mike, what do you think?
I'm going to say it is, I'll have that, 13,000 followers.
Okay, should have halved it again, 6,000 followers, well, 6,055 followers. Their last tweet is from 2010.
Oof. Oh, okay.
So the Pontiac went the way of the Aztecs.
Yep. That's another history lesson for us.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot
so
of people
today.
Also suggested Charmin. I couldn't find an appropriate Face Off for Charmin that made sense.
Yeah, about a bunch of bears wiping their asses.
Yeah, but they did have...
that had oh, Mountain God. Dew in
oh,
them.
No. They did have one funny tweet, though, that was like, annual fall PSA, we do not make pumpkin spice toilet paper. Even Charmin isn't that basic.
Ew. Oh, my God. I feel like that is a one-way trip to, like, the walk-in clinic.
I wipe my ass with pumpkin spice. What do I do?
I have an infection.
Anyway, all right. Well, thank you guys for playing.
It's the BB21.
Yeah, I think I'm
going
to enjoy my new Mountain Dew Amp Game Fuel to recover.
Well, should that be a sponsor of the BNB, considering how many games we play?
Yeah, it really should be. I think we need the hashtag Mountain Dew Amp Game Fuel.
Yeah, let's get that hashtag trending again, people. So,
and let's, like, who cares about, you know, sperm count? Like, really, are any of us getting laid after this?
Definitely not.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. So I want to go, we took a brief deviation last week from this episode title guessing game, but I want to bring it back because next week episode title is Suck It Up, Buttercup. And I thought it was interesting enough that we could try to speculate as to A, who said it, and B, who do we think they're saying it about? Who needs to suck it up?
So this could be something where it, you know, I could see it directed to potentially like Karishma, for example, or Dean, right? Where it's like the two people who are on the outs and they're trying to like keep like have pull somebody in and like suck it up, Buttercup. Like, we're going to get through this. But that being said, I can really see maybe, I don't know, maybe Missy says that line or
yeah,
Elaine.
I like how like we're just attributing any sort of like semi brutal statement. Yeah. Like Missy was the one who said this week, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds you. So I could see a scenario where she's like, suck it up, Buttercup. Come on.
Could be Elaine. I don't know.
I the thing is that like I feel like that's such a like older thing to say. Like, I feel like I wouldn't say suck it up, Buttercup.
It
I feel
sounds so awkward saying like, it. Sorry.
Well, yeah. Suck it up, Buttercup. But yeah, maybe if I'm over articulating, it doesn't sound right. But I don't know. I feel like it's kind of corny. So I feel like I can hear like Nora saying it. Or, you know, I don't know.
I feel like Nora's more encouraging. Like when she was encouraging Karishma, wriggling her way up the sand, like trying to coach her along in the middle of the challenge. I feel like she's more positive in that regard. I don't know if she would necessarily say, suck it up, Buttercup.
But I could also see like when she was like complaining, you know, back at former Vokai, where she was complaining about, you know, no one doing work and being lazy and stuff, being like, you know what, like, this is Survivor, we've got to work, suck it up, Buttercup, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but I'm just trying to figure out who she'd be putting that on. We did see in the preview that we're getting a little, we might get a little bit more of like Jamal and Jack, you know, versus Nora possibly, so I'm wondering if that could be part of it. I don't know. Is this something Janet would say?
Suck it up, Buttercup.
I feel like Janet, it could be Aaron. I could actually feel that Aaron, because Aaron's a dad, as we see from the kids on his socks. So I feel like he could be, that's like a very dad phrase of like, suck it up, Buttercup. Come on, let's do this. Like maybe Missy show.
Spider-Man would suck it up.
Yes, Spider-Man would do it. The big day tomorrow to suck it up, Buttercup.
Oh, God.
I think that, because I think that maybe there's something where like Missy doesn't want to flip on Elizabeth and Elaine, and Aaron's complaining about that because we showed that, you know, it seems he's very keen on flipping on former Lyro, even though he voted with them last time. So I definitely could see Aaron doing something like that. I mean, you could see if Boston Rahm and Sandra were different types of teachers this season, I could also see them saying it. But I don't think I think they're softer on the contestants than maybe we initially thought they would be.
Mike, I just want to go back to your statement about when you said we know Aaron's a dad because of his socks, which I just love this. Much like, you know, then what, you know, who you're podcasting with. Can you imagine if it's like, oh, I know they're married because they wear a ring. Oh, well, I know they have children because they have their children's faces on their socks. That is like a normal convention.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Aaron's at a bar and like a woman goes up to flirt with him and he just like pulls up his pants to reveal his socks and she walks away.
Yeah, listen, lady. Well, got my kid on my socks.
It's so interesting that this got brought up because we saw these socks when we visited the Lyro camp on day two. They were all lazing about the shelter. We mentioned it before with the rat battles and everything, and Aaron had his socks prominently displayed. I remember thinking, like, that has to be his kid, right? He doesn't just have some socks with some kid's face on it, but I obviously couldn't have the environment.
Oh my God, no, it's
that.
Like when you buy a frame and it's got the stock photo of the family in it and you just like keep the stock photo.
You're like, I don't know, it's just some weird kid on my socks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what was this? Like, just the random kid's face? He was like, oh yeah, I thought it was a cool design.
Yeah, see, this is what Harry should have done in Australian Survivor. He should have brought random kids on his socks so he could be like, yeah, this is my kid. I love him.
Does he?
He's three and I think he can walk.
I can with these socks.
It's proof. It's on a sock.
So we shall see who meets who Buttercup is next week. I want to move into this game because I'm very excited because I have become obsessed with this new character, Detective Dean Kowalski.
Oh, yes.
The hard-boiled detective who we saw get into his big first case, the Chelsea Walker case, in the beginning of this episode. And Dean, using his best investigation skills, was able to figure out, A, it wasn't him, and B, it wasn't Chelsea, and that's about as far as he got.
She's at home eating Oreos, as he said.
Such a good detective. A real hearty boy.
And he literally just went through the rest of the tribe. He's like, so it must be so-and-so, 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 so-and-so. It's like, oh, wow.
I love
powers
it.
Powers of deduction.
I love it so much, though, because, like, maybe it's just the alliteration of Detective Dean, but it really reminds me of, like, an Encyclopedia Brown. Of, like, this preteen kid being like, I'm going to solve the mystery. And he has, like, instead of a trench coat, he has, like, that olive cardigan on. It's so much fun. I really hope we get more Detective Dean.
Yes. I want him to have more cases to solve.
Yeah, I would love for this to be a through line with the season. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Real Nancy Drew.
So
Nancy Dean.
I was inspired by this to see, what if Detective Dean could help solve some other cases from Survivor's past? So I have come up with a game I like to call Who Dean It? And here's how it works. I am going to read a case file from Detective Dean about a scenario that unfolded on a previous Survivor season. And it is up to you to guess who Dean It. The answer is going to be a person from that season. And we'll go back and forth, but if you get it wrong, I'll give the other person a chance to guess as well. So we're going throughout Survivor history here with Detective Dean to see if he has any better chance of getting a case right here.
Is this going to be multiple choice?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait, can we work as a team?
You know what? Yeah, sure.
Is this a cooperative?
And we'll make you the Hardy Girls, and you guys get to work as a team here.
I'm a Libra, so I'm very cooperative. I like to work with others, so...
I'm a Pisces, so I'm emotional, so...
All right, let's get into the case files of Detective Dean, and I have a little bit of music to get us into the mood.
Oh, great. Oh, this is sexy.
Detective Dean case files, day 27. My trip to Nicaragua has sent me south of the border in more ways than one, with a pair of pinched pink panties making one mug see red. The victim, a cuckoo who's dressed the part with a feather in his cap to boot. Half of these cats around camp are liable to send these saggy shorts 6 feet under. My interrogations with the other half gave me no answers, only zombie-like stares. Here's hoping I can catch this wolf before this case turns crispy. Okay.
Oh my God.
You have to figure out who Dean it.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm not gonna lie. I should have been paying more attention to the clues. I was just sort of caught up in what was happening. I mean, the music and the way it was written, everything was amazing about this. I mean, my guess, I mean, immediately upon hearing Nicaragua, my first thought was, oh, it's gotta be like Dan's shoes, right? So it has to be Holly would be, but then I didn't listen to the rest of it. So does that make sense, Jenny? Or do you think it was something else?
Would you like me to read it one more time?
Yes, it's definitely please. About it's well, he talks about pink underwear, right? It's about Philip.
Oh, in Nicaragua, not necessarily Survivor
Nicaragua. But like
and feathers in the hair, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, but was the question about is the answer Philip or is it about
No, he was the victim. I'm asking yeah, who exactly. Dean it, who pilfered the pink panties.
How do I not remember this? Do you remember who?
I'm just like caught up in this whole thing.
Who
no,
stole
I
his
don't,
underwear?
I don't remember this. This is like the Mass Singer also kind of with all of the clue packages. I really like this concept. Nope, I don't remember. Where's our like phone a friend?
Who was that Survivor? It was on Redemption Island, right? It was mm-hmm. that it was the first.
Yeah. It was on Redemption Island. Yeah, good thing we're not in This Week in Survivor history.
Let's see if you can do it. Detective Dean can get his person. Can you identify who pilfered pink pants?
Jordan Kalish would at least give us a multiple choice. Just saying.
Doesn't work that way out there in the hard world of Detective Dean.
Didn't he like get rid of him himself or something?
No, some I do remember this. Someone stole them, but I cannot remember.
Can Dean crack the case for us?
Yeah.
Dean, unfortunately, because you were working with Dean, the suspect got away, though history books would say that it was Julie Wolfe, the firefighter, who stole Philip's pink shorts and buried them before tribal council, where she got voted off after gloating about it.
I have literally not thought about Julie Wolfe since, like, in a decade, probably.
Well, let's see if you can fare better with case file number two.
Oh, different music.
Detective Dean case files, day 25. Or day 22, I'm sorry. 15. I get my days mixed up. I'm getting soaked to the bone here in the Philippines, but it's up to me to figure out what's the score. A rogue vote became the wild pitch that struck out poor Jeff Kent, sending him crying to Obama. It was a night full of surprises as both sides showed they were packing heat. When the dust settled after the gunplay, a stray bullet for the Brazilian dragon made Kent croak. This lollipop got licked, and the perpetrator won't be whistling Dixie anytime soon if this gumshoe can help it. Who Dean it?
Okay, so the vote was for the Brazilian dragon. So we're talking Survivor Philippines, of course. It was the vote for Abby Maria was what sent Jeff Kent home.
Wait, so we're looking for the rogue vote?
Yes, the person who sent who voted the rogue way that accidentally sent Jeff Kent home.
Ooh, okay, let's see. Okay, if we can remember. Okay, well, I know. Okay, so wait. Okay, so Penn, I remember. Didn't Penner was the one who voted for Abby Maria?
I think it's Penner, right?
Is that your final answer?
That's what we're trying to figure out, right?
It's not. It's who threw the vote right. at Abby Maria, which is
right, which is the reason why Jeff went home with five. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yes.
You got your guy, Jonathan Penner. Was he Dean it?
He deemed that.
All right, let's move on to the next case file. Detective Dean Case Files, Day 25. A battle of the ages has left all weapons turned on the young guns. Seems two twerps have been dipping into their own secret stash, snacking on some tasty treats they don't want to share with the rest of the class. A boy in blue on the tribe has fingered a suspicious pair, despite a history between them that's more stormy than a rogue cyclone. I've been trying to pump these tomcats for alibis, but they're keeping a lid tighter than a mason jar. Who deen it?
Did you say fingered a pair?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure I heard you correctly. So we're looking for, we're looking for the two people. This is Millennials Gen X, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's gotta Adam be and Taylor, right?
Adam Taylor. Yeah.
That is correct. You deemed it.
Yeah.
We deemed it.
We deemed
that. Oh my God. We deemed that. And we arrested two people. So that's like a pretty good deal.
You got two for one there. Yes. And the fingering boy in blue was a reference to Brett LaBelle.
Of course.
I was like, oh, he's an undercover cop working on the tribe.
Oh, the boy in blue. Yeah.
The boy in blue. I know. I was like, was there a blue tribe?
All right. Let's move on. Let's see if you can keep this hot streak going, ladies.
So does the day refer to the day it happened?
Yeah.
Was that on day 25?
Oh, wow. This is very thorough. I'm very impressed.
I think day 25 was the day that Taylor got voted out. Either that or when they found out that the stash existed.
I see. Okay.
Mm.
All right. Here we go. Detective Dean Case Files, Day 6. All these food cases are making me hungry for the truth. This time it's a bunch of Brazilian broads who are bickering over some glommed granola found at camp. My main suspect is the bird who looks to be flying on the outs. But whatever questions I throw her way, she ain't listening. This private dick is hoping to grab his girl before she changes her hairstyle and hightails it out of here. Houdini it.
Okay, well, this is from the Amazon.
Yeah, definitely. It's Janet, right?
That is correct. You deemed it.
Yay!
Woo!
We deemed it.
We deemed that.
You deemed that. Coke, get on it. Start tweeting that we deemed it. That's the new thing the kids are into.
Hashtag deemed it. Hashtag Mountain Dew Amp Game Fuel.
Dean to do.
Mountain deemed it.
Dean to do.
Or due to Dean. All right, let's move on here. Another case for Detective Dean. Detective Dean Case Files, Day 24. It's already hot and co wrong, but that didn't stop the heated standoff I walked into. A nighttime nuisance has doused the camp's fire, and there are plenty of guys and dolls at large. The gruesome twosome with three first names between them is number one on the list, having hidden the axe and having one to grind against the others. There's the screwball doing pull-ups down the beach, but all I got out of her was a story of how she used to be a PI. But I have a feeling my Mark may be the person nobody suspects. A sap who will flip with the best of them. Houdini it.
Oh, this is Ty.
It's the fire.
Right.
But
it's the sap. So it's not Kyle or Scott.
Yeah, because it was Ty that put out the fire, uh-huh. And then but basically it got blamed on Kyle and Scott.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I mean, they were also causing shenanigans, but yeah, Ty was like part of that like boys club thing.
Yeah. And he was like, and I remember he was like, oh my God, I can't believe I did it.
Oh my God. That was a crazy season. Okay. We're going to go.
So it was Ty. Yeah. Yeah,
you deemed it. It was Ty.
We deemed that.
Yeah, I was careful not to, because I, like you said, Kyle Jason and Scott Pollard would be the first two to blame. But no, I believe they did pour out the fire, but they also hid the axe. And I believe Ty was the one who, in the middle of the night, got up and did it secretly without anybody knowing. So yes, Ty was the more secretive of the people to get away with this. But Dean was still able to book him thanks to your help.
Book him, Dano. All right.
Anytime, Dean.
Welcome, Dino. All right. Here we go. One more.
Oh my God, I love this.
Detective Dean Case Files. Day 21. I arrived down under to a case that turned this game upside down. Jeff Varner was gutted before the peanut butter even hit his stomach, with his past coming back to haunt him. Looks like the gang in green caught wind of a bullet that was fired his way by a dame who liked to throw a rock or two in her day. They used that intel to keep their Hershey bar from melting and leaving the kangaroos hopping mad. But the question remains, who was the rat who fingered Jeff and made the worm turn? Houdini.
Oh my God.
Why is everyone fingering everybody?
Yeah, there's so much fingering going on.
Daniel ringering.
Well, actually, the other meaning behind it would make actually ends up being very appropriate given who deemed it, if you figure it out.
Definition.
Was it? Okay, so can you say the last line of that again?
The question remains.
Detective Dean.
Who was the rat who fingered Jeff and made the worm turn?
Is it Kimmy?
Is that your final answer?
What was
the line about? There was something about throwing rocks, though. Rocks.
So to clarify, we're looking for the person who told the gang in green about the vote against Jeff Varner.
Oh, who told them? Was it Kimmy?
I think it's Kimmy.
No, because she was voted out, right? That was the merge
in Australia.
Yeah, because that was the merge boot. Like Jeff was the merge boot, right? Was it
vote Kimmy? I don't know.
Can you read the rest of it? Can you read it again?
I arrived down under to a case that turned the game upside down. Jeff Varner was gutted before the peanut butter even hit his stomach, with his past coming back to haunt him. Looks like the gang in green caught wind of a bullet that was fired his way by a dame who liked to throw a rock or two in her day. They used that intel to keep their Hershey bar from melting and leaving the kangaroos hopping mad. But the question remains, who was the rat who fingered Jeff and made the worm turn?
The rock thing is totally throwing me off because I'm like, that must be some sort of clue, but I don't. Does Kimmy play baseball? Toss the rock?
I don't know. Just take a guess. Sure.
The only thing that's coming to me was that it might be Kimmy, but I cannot remember that season very well.
I don't think it was. I think it was, isn't it Alicia? I don't know. I don't remember.
We can give different answers and then we'll just.
Okay. Yeah. Let's
you
do
wanna
that.
Go with Alicia.
Okay.
I'll go with Kimmy.
Right, yeah. That sounds good.
I
will say one of you is right. So you walk down separate paths to try to get your perp here. Liana is led straight into the fire where her hands get burned. And Jenny is able to corner Kimmy Kappenberg and book her. She was the correct answer.
Okay. What is the rock thing, though?
Deb was the one who cast the vote for Jeff Varner. But at the reward challenge the next day, allegedly, Kimmy had told Tina that Jeff had a vote against.
Oh, who voted for Jeff so that they knew to put the votes on Jeff so that it was a
tie.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, that went completely over my head. I got it now. Okay,
the last statement, made the worm turn, is a reference to the fact that Kimmy is a vegetarian, but she could eat the worm, which was the big thing that made Kucha win that first challenge. And ironically enough,
oh my goodness,
bring Jeff is appropriate considering that she talked about masturbation quite a bit.
Come on. Is it appropriate, Mike?
For this podcast, it is.
Yes.
But congratulations. You, for the vast majority of these cases, were able to close them appropriately and assist Detective Dean through the years. And he's very grateful for your service.
Dean, if you ever need a couple of assistants, Liana and I are here.
Yeah, we'll be Detective Dean assistants for hire.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I'm still like thrown by all the music. Where did you find all those music clips?
Yeah.
Did you
just there's a YouTube video that's film noir background music and there's like 10 tracks on it. So I've just been clicking through, giving your little iTunes 30-second samples.
That
I was very impressed.
Oh my gosh.
Very
good. I had a lot of fun writing these, if you couldn't tell.
so good.
Okay. There's one thing that I want to talk about before we start to wrap things up or get into our question of the week, I guess. So the Kelly Dean relationship. So I was immediately having flashbacks to Big Brother with Tommy and Christy, who knew each other outside.
They know each other.
It seems like Kelly and Dean don't actually know each other. So it seems like Dean's 6-year relationship, I guess, is a person who went to school with Kelly. Is that correct?
Yes.
It sounded to me like, you know, I mean, we didn't see them realize that they knew the same person, but I wonder if like Kelly was like, oh, I go to, because Dean said that they went to like the same business school,
yeah,
or something.
I totally imagine.
So I wonder if Kelly,
yeah, it's like, oh yeah. I go to Wharton. Oh, Wharton, do you know so and so? Oh yeah, yeah, I'm actually, yeah, good friends with her.
Yeah, I do. And then yeah, oh, that's my ex-girlfriend, so
okay.
Which is, yeah.
All right, good.
But it didn't seem to me as if they actually had ever met or knew of each other. It was more so just like a small world type of thing.
Also, it's very similar to In Gabon, where Marcus is actually really good friends with Crystal Cox's cousin. Like, they never met each other, but they found that out. You know, it's not a situation of like Patrick and Allie, or like, I believe even Brett and Laura Moret in Survivor Samoa had like gone to the same church at one point in time. So they never actually had interacted. But it's so interesting because Dean had talked to me in the preseason saying that one of the reasons why he moved to New York was for a relationship. And he said that that relationship broke off. And I guess this is the person he's referring to. So, yeah, he even moved to New York to be with this girl of 6.5 years.
That's crazy. Do you think that there are going to be any ramifications in terms of the game? I almost kind of feel like, you know, we talked about Patrick and Allie, you know, knowing each other, and that really didn't result in much. I feel like this one might actually have some legs a little bit. I don't know. Maybe because it was like such a long relationship that Dean was in, but I don't know then if Kelly feels sort of the same like reciprocity when it comes to the relationship.
I feel like any opportunity to like connect with people really helps. So like even just like having, you know, something to talk about in common will obviously like bond Kelly and Dean. But we did see in the episode that Kelly's like, oh, there's just something about Dean that is like very likable and you like want to work with him. But also, how many other people feel that way? And that's maybe not a good thing. So I was actually quite impressed to see that Kelly was like aware of her feelings and how that maybe isn't a good thing. So
yeah, I think the answer to your question, Liana, is I think she's gonna keep him on a short leash, if that makes sense. Where like I think she's chummy with him. There's that great scene where Nora, Janet, and Kelly come together and Janet's like, yeah, I think I've got Tom, and Kelly's like, yeah, I think I've got Karishma and Dean, and they're all sort of like, oh wow, that came a lot easier than I think we thought it would.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if she's going to maintain a relationship with him. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Dean stayed. But I think if it came down to like protecting Dean versus helping her alliance, I think she'd do the latter any day of the week.
And I think
it's not. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think that she's also probably just going to be keeping an eye on like how he is with other people, because as long as she feels like, you know, she's Dean's number one, then that benefits her. But if what she's worried about is that he can get himself in good with other people and kind of keep squeaking by, then that's a problem. So I think that, you know, she might be feeling prioritized to like keep him to the merge. But once we get to the merge, if he's, you know, like kind of gallivanting back with other people, then that's when she's like, okay, well, unless you're working for me, then you're working against me.
You said, Jenny, so Dean is an Aries. What is Kelly? Yes.
Kelly is a Libra.
Kelly's Libra. Are those two signs compatible?
They are, they're actually sister signs. Oh, so they're like, they're opposites on the zodiac. So they're definitely seen as opposites. Now sometimes opposites attract. I wouldn't say that they are super compatible, but they are not the most incompatible, if that makes sense.
Okay, because I wonder if that could be used to judge whether or not their relationship will matter.
We've seen
Jeremy Collins be like, oh yeah, like she, Abby's a Scorpio, like I wouldn't get along with her. So it's not unheard of for people to you know, base their relationships on astrological. magical signs.
Well, and Jeremy is saying that Val is a Scorpio. So he talks, Jeremy Collins talks about Val being a Scorpio.
Interesting.
So,
well, according to this website, that was the first Google search result. Aries and Libra have a 40% trust level. So, you know, not great.
That actually is very comparable to how Kelly vocalized her trust in Dean.
But they have they're very good. They have a 99% in emotions. And now I don't know actually what that means, but summary is 62%. So
not 69.
Well, I know, so close. Whatever. Math is tight. Lol. Hashtag Mountain Dew.
Thanks, Mountain Dew. All right. Well, let's move on to our final segment here of the BNB, the question of the week. Last week, question of the week, again, on the topic of Dean, what would you write in a letter to the person you blindsided? We'll get some answers from the audience out there and then give our own. First, from Sir Mayans, if I were to send a letter for the person I blindsided, it would go like this. I'm so sorry that I blindsided you. If I win, though, I would have help to pay your mortgage to make up for it if that wasn't against the rules.
And then spark its own conspiracy theory that we talk about with Antonio, perhaps.
Yeah, or I mean, we did find that loophole, though. You could say, I'll move in with you. Don't worry. I'm sorry I blindsided you. As soon as we get back home, I'm moving in.
And then I'll pay rent. It'll be fine.
Dan Sinensky says, I'm not sure what I would write, but my letter would have lessons stolen from a teen drama. Okay, we came on Survivor to deceive each other, but in the end, we only deceived ourselves. And close with, later, skater, or catch you on the flip.
Catch you on the flippity flap. I love it.
P.S. Sorry, I flipped. John Tinkham says, my letter to someone I blindsided. Go sit at Ponderosa pondering what went wrong. Those bad moves you make, rethink them. The lesson is, you don't mess with Tinkham. Ooh. After trying to sound cool, I most likely stab my hand trying to put the cap on the pen and be medevaced. Here's a fun one from Jonathan Troyer. I gave you up. I let you down. I ran around and deserted you. I may have made you cry. It's time to say goodbye. I told a lie and hurt you because I'm not Rick Astley. I'm trying to win Survivor, goddammit.
Did you just get Rickrolled on a podcast?
There's no escaping it.
The internet.
I'm frankly surprised that none of those brands, Leon, have tried to get it on the Rickroll.
Yes, sweeping the nation in 2019.
Or like doing the Harlem Shake while eating. God,
I'm sure. Oh man, I didn't go back far enough to find those tweets. I'm sure they exist.
Parker Schimler just says, "See ya, wouldn't want to be ya." Elizabeth says, "I would write a classic comment from the one and only Rob Cesternino. Na 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 na, na 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 na. Hey hey hey." Goodbye. Do you think that translates well onto text, though, with all the nas?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, you have to, like, think about them to write it out, like, na, 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 na.
You gotta put the commas or something like in there to, like, help.
It's like a non-tuple negative.
Mm.
Does that mean no or good?
Like,
no or
na, 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 na.
Na, na,
na.
No, 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 no. Yeah, hey, goodbye.
Hey, hey, goodbye. Hey, goodbye. Yeah, I can just imagine someone reading it like verbatim like that and being like, that doesn't make any sense.
Do you guys
sense.
Ever come up with like tweet ideas and then you're like, this only makes sense if I can say it? Like, if I write this out, this isn't funny.
Yeah, I feel like when you put emphasis on words, it's really hard to come across in text unless you put it in all caps, but then you sound a little
crazy.
Right,
exactly.
Well, especially if it's like a word that, you know, is like, it can be spelled differently and have different meanings. And so you know, only speaking it can give the person the interpretation of like how I said that word. Whereas if you have to type it out, then you're choosing which word it is. You know what I'm saying? Like the word like scene, for example, it's like, is it S-E-E-N or S-C-E-N-E?
Spelling is also hard.
So those things. Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult. It's spelling is tight.
Spelling is tight. So Josh Green came up with actually some specific goodbye messages, speaking of Big Brother, for specific players. For Jamal, he wrote, you should have treated me with grace.
Deuces.
For Nora, he wrote, laugh less and listen more. See you never. For Jason, he wrote, please don't strip at this tribal to prove you don't have an idol. And at Missy, he wrote, wrestle with the strategy of Survivor instead of Elaine. Goodbye.
I like that one.
The wrestling is so interesting.
I love that. I love that it's happened like apparently like two or three times at this point. I guess you get bored out there, but really?
I love two or three Jason. Times? I love Jason being like, you guys are very different to the other women from her old tribe. Like straight up wrestling.
I want to go to John here because John offered three separate music lyrics. I think we can try to figure out which is the best one for a goodbye message. You need to calm down. Let it be, or thank you next, which is the best one to use.
Well, I think it kind of depends on what message you're trying to send, right? You know, like, let it be. You obviously, you know, it's like, it's okay. Let it be. Thank you next is like, bitch, bye.
Oh,
yeah.
I really hope this comes out in time for someone to make a wand of Let It Be called Applebee's.
Jenny!
Okay. No, here's the thing is... This is actually, I have, there's a few of us, there's a few of us wand offers that chat regularly, and I'm not gonna lie, this has actually already come up.
What? Is someone gonna do it?
It's possible, like, if it's already come up, and then, Liana, you just came up with it now, then, like, I would say there's a non-zero chance that we hear Let It Be.
It
would be really funny, though.
It's gonna get to the we didn't start the fire levels. Like,
exactly.
Queso on fajitas, Applebee's. The queso looked pretty good, though.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to go to Applebee's. I have no shame.
Yeah, like...
All right. Let's finish out with Logan. Sup, fella? Don't cry because we blindsided Joass to Ponderosa. Just breathe through the nose, stuff your face with a burger, and forgive me when you face a rectangular parchment on day 39. You just got played. Lots of emotions going on in this one.
I like blindside your ass.
Like
blindside.
It goes from like
ass.
Tough love to like therapeutic, and then also like a little bit of ass kissing to then like just a bitter turn at the end.
Sup, fella is my favorite introduction, I think, to a letter. I'm gonna start emails that way. Professional work emails. Sup, fella.
I think Logan might be a water sign. That was a lot of emotions in one tweet.
Well, Liana, what is your letter you would write to a blind
psychic? So the reason why I knew about the Bradley tiny mouth comments was I turned to Casual's Corner to inspire me. I knew there were ones that had insults, and so I went to go find them. So some good ones that I would put was sucks to suck, good riddance butt chunk, which is my personal favorite.
Oh, our favorite.
Yes, I'm happy to bring that back. The shut up Rhonda one doesn't really make any sense. And then one that I wrote was your breath smells like a wet flip-flop.
Ew.
I know, I don't know what that means. So I would probably put good riddance butt chunk. That would be my favorite.
Who's Rhonda?
Yeah, I feel like it's most applicable across like all people.
I don't know, but someone told her to shut up.
Oh my god. Okay, I've got two different ones. You know, similar to what John was going for, I actually have a lyric. I picture a scenario where, you know, maybe like a Carl Boudreaux sort of scenario where I won a reward and maybe got a little sauced on the reward and some loose lips sinking those ships. So I'm going to quote the great T-Pain and just simply say, blame it on the alcohol.
Yes.
So is that another one that would be very interestingly read by the person
exactly,
out loud?
Exactly, as you can hear.
Blame it on the alcohol.
Perfect.
Oh my god. No, that should be all of them. Just T-Pain quotes. Like, I'm in love with a stripper. Or, like, I don't know.
Which explains a lot as to why you went home.
Yeah. I need $1 million to pay for the stripper I'm in love with. and then the other one was inspired by this episode. There was a quote that I wrote down, and it reminded me, as you know, I am a Survivor and a Big Brother person. When Dean said that his, it's a saying from him and his buddies where he says, I got, and it reminded me of the famous fight between in Big Brother 11 between Russell and Jeff Schroeder, Big Jeff. The you got line is very memorable to me. So I like the idea of just simply saying you got.
Oh, I love it.
I came up with a little limerick for mine, this short and sweet. Sorry I cut your game at the knees. You couldn't see the forest for the trees. Your uptake was too slow, so you had to go. Don't worry, I owe you Applebee's.
I expected Domino's.
Probably would have been better.
No. You get the chicken wings. You get the blue ribbon brownie.
Oh my gosh, Jeff Probst. I mean, I know that he does the salivating thing when he's describing rewards, but my God, with the Applebee's, that was like a level and a half. Oh my gosh.
Queso.
It's a new kid, so you really need to like build it up. You know, they don't know what Applebee's is.
Oh,
to
you know
Survivor.
What? The other thing about that whole reward was I loved it when he unveiled and it was like one plate. Like sitting by itself and like
at least they didn't have the whole thing that had to sit there while they wriggled through the sand, though. Like, you know, it wasn't like the pizza mountain that's coagulated. Right. I'm assuming that they maybe got fresh Applebee's, which I don't really know what is fresh Applebee's.
It's a relative term.
It's not actually a thing. Oh, man.
So for next week, we mentioned this before, but we're going to give you out there a scenario. You have to wear one piece of clothing on Survivor with a person's face on it. What is it, and who do you pick? So this can be somebody from your life. It could be a celebrity. It could be a previous Survivor player. But you're going out on Survivor, and you have to wear at least one piece of clothing that has someone's face on it. It is mandatory, because this is the point that Survivor has gotten to. You can always give us these answers on Twitter using hashtag RHAPBNB. Email them in, RHAPBNB@gmail.com, or respond to this post on many different outlets. We'll get into it all next week with the great Jessica Leese rejoining us on the RHAP B&B to break down episode 6. But for now, Jenny, this was a delightful debut on the B&B for you. We learned so much about astrology. We learned so much about Dan Rengering's math skills, and that apparently math is tight. If people want to keep up with all of your opinions about Survivor, Big Brother, and otherwise, how can people find you on social media?
I'm on social media at Jenny Autumn, and I just want to thank you guys for letting me wander in and letting me use your out-of-service phone. I think I'll make myself at home here.
You should take in vagrants more often, especially if they have captain titles.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I'll salute you, and I'll send you off to your room. Liana, I know it was an off week for the Masked Singer. Do we know if it's coming
back?
So
it's going to depend on the World Series, I think. So if it goes to Game 7, then I think we will not have another episode. But I think otherwise we will. Honestly, I don't know. Puya does the whole thing. I just show up when he tells me to show up. But I will say, so maybe I should save the story for next week. But on the question of the week that we're going to ask about the piece of clothing with a person's face on it. So there's this thing that happened in 90 Day Fiancé, The Other Way, which is a spinoff. Anyway, so there's a guy who...
What is The Other Way? Does it happen the other way now?
It's where the people from the U.S. go to the country of their foreign partner or whatever. So anyway, okay. So this woman is flying in to meet this guy, and I think he's Tunisian. Anyway, so he's got a t-shirt with her face on it that he's wearing to the airport. But the problem is she photoshopped all her pictures to make her look like thinner, younger, prettier, blah, blah, blah. So he's at the airport with this like totally photoshopped picture of her. And she like shows up and there's this shot of like him like with his arm around her with the big picture on the shirt. And then she's like next to it. It's like, this is not the same person. It was so funny.
This sounds right down my alley.
It's amazing. So for other musings and stories like that, you can follow me on social media at Liana Boris. Just chilling. And maybe we'll see you next week for The Masked Singer.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have to wait 90 days for the next episode of the Masked Singer podcast.
That's right.
You can always follow me at @AMikeBloomType. You can check out the weekly exit press I do for Survivor. I got to talk with Tom this week, as I mentioned before, who got into a lot of stuff about his own feelings on the game, as well as apparently his involvement, big involvement in the first two Lyro votes. I'm also going down the hatch with Josh Wiggler every week. We are getting to very interesting episode of Lost coming up that I'm very intrigued get into with the one and only Josh Wiggler. I'll also be traveling a bit off the RHAP site to talk some challenge this week on the Dom and Colin podcast, which should be very interesting for a very, very interesting season of the challenge thus far. So feel free to catch up on all the stuff that we're doing, not only between the three of us, but also on the wrap-ups, on RHAP in general as we move into episode 6. That's going to do it for this week. If you have any game suggestions, we've received quite a few, which I'm super grateful for. Thank you, by the way, to Felipe Shimon, who gave me this idea after sending in a Detective Dean fan fiction of Dean solving cases through the years. This would not have been possible without him. So if you want to send us ideas, quite honestly, we're entertaining all options here. We're keeping our game nice and open. So feel free to send it to us anytime. We're always happy to get suggestions. And thank you all so much for listening and your support throughout. That's going to do it for this week. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing all this behind the scenes. Paul Osselson, our head writer, and Wolf from America for our theme song. Jenny, thank you so much again. Liana, great work as per usual. We'll be back next week breaking down episode 6 with Jessica Leese. For now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBMB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.